Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Couple of Nukes. As always, I'm your host, Mr. Whiskey, and be sure to check out the website for this podcast and email us at coupleofnukes@gmail.com if you want to be featured on the show or have us review a particular topic. But yeah, today I am here with Sean Douglas. He is a United States Air Force veteran of over 20 years, and I'm going to pass him the mic and let him introduce himself for us and for y'all. Because he has so much to offer.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah, man. I spent 20 years and 4 days in the U.S. Air Force and retired after that time, which would have taken me to December 1st of 2021. And in that time, I was an aircraft mechanic. So I was basically a crew chief on F-15s, F-16s, F-22s, A-10s. Did security forces for a little while, did 4 years of basic training drill instructor, and it was a fun and amazing 20 years, man.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you kind of just got out pretty recently here. Do you still feel like you're transitioning out, or have you gotten a pretty good hold of everything, or did you start kind of planning everything well before you got out?
Oh yeah, you got to plan well ahead. Most of the time, people will plan maybe like a couple months out. I was already building businesses and already establishing myself on the outside well before I even retired. But yeah, that is kind of a unique question. I do feel like I'm still transitioning, because 20 years of service, it's only been 2 years since I've been out, you know?
Right.
So it doesn't feel like 2 years. Feels like
yesterday.
Not too long ago. Yeah, not too long ago. But then if you look back at the time, you're like, wow, that really was like 2 years ago.
Right.
Just, I mean, you know, but then if you look at the time that I served, you know, it feels like a lifetime ago. So I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, no, I get that, because come this May, I'll hit my 1 year mark. So I just passed my half year mark not too long ago. I think it was like November, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe it's been that long already, because it feels like it's just been a few days since I got out. And at the same time, it's that
right.
Seems like a completely different life I lived, like a past life. And
yep.
We talk a lot on this show about struggling with having a purpose and identity once you get out, especially the guys and girls who are in for a really long time, how it becomes, you know, the only thing about them, that's their whole identity. Obviously, you stated that you started setting up businesses ahead of time and stuff. So did you kind of have a pre-established identity, or are you still struggling with not being in the Air Force anymore as far as, like, you know, that became your life? Like, how do you feel about that?
No. So, very excellent question. I delivered my third TEDx talk earlier in 2023. And ironically, that theme was identity. And I talked about how in the military, you're given the identity of the top 1% of everybody who will ever, you know, serve in the military. You are the top 1% that the American population has to offer. We're
right.
Given this identity of the best of the best. And then when you're done with the military, you take off the uniform for the last time. It's like, that's it. That was your life, that uniform, that patch, that flag. So yeah, there is a little bit of identity crisis, because not like, now who am I? Who am I at my core? And I used to ask myself that all the time, like, who am I at my core? Who am I?
Right.
Am I just this American airman in the greatest air force on the planet? Or is there more? And so, yes, we are deeply rooted in our identity as an American service, man or woman. But more than that, it's the reason why we served is where our identity should lie, because that is our true character, you know. And there's a amazing Bible quote, whether you like the Bible or not, or whatever your beliefs are, he says, there is no greater love than a man who will lay down his life for his friends. And you see a lot of military pictures of brothers and sisters serving together in the desert under fire. And then there's that Bible quote, right? But
Right.
why would you serve? So instead of putting the identity into your uniform, put the identity into the why, into your own personal mission behind why you're serving. And it's a little bit easier when you transition out because that mission is still there. You know, it was very, very hard for me to take off the uniform, and there was a solemn, I'm telling you, man, there was a solemn moment. I had my blues, I had my greens, and it was like, whew, like this is a little bit harder than I thought, you know. And I'm putting them all away in my garment
Right.
bag. I zip it up and I'm like, never gonna wear this again. Last day in the uniform. You know, it was hard taking it off.
That's awesome. You know, it's very different from, unfortunately, a lot of the guests I have on and a lot of, the sailors and soldiers I'm in contact with and the airmen, a lot of them are very eager to take it off. You know, so it's nice and refreshing to hear a different, different style of that to have that American pride in what you did and what you served. And I'm going to ask you a couple questions now because you said you were asking yourself who you were. And I want to know, did you find the answer? How did you find the answer? And you're talking about the why we serve. So obviously, Mr. Douglas, we got to ask you why you served. And I'm going to go out there and kind of say it probably changed for you over time when you first joined. I'm assuming you started out of high school or somewhere around that time. And then as you served, I mean, you did a full 20 years, so that's multiple lifetimes almost within the service itself. So, how did that answer change over time?
Yes, I did find who I was long before I ever got out. And it wasn't until I went back to basic training that I actually found who I was, the why, like, because sometimes it changes. Here's the big thing. So I joined right after 9/11. And I was actually working at Discount Tire as a warehouse manager and living with my mom, 18 years old. I mean, pretty good pay, you know, as a manager at 18. I mean, it's really decent pay. And then 9/11 happened, and I was like, that's it. That's my Dare to Be Great moment. You know, I graduated high school with like maybe a 2.0. Like I was like a C and D student. Didn't
Right.
go to college, was not going to go to college. I just needed to find what I wanted to do. I had so many things I wanted to do with my life and so many things that I was doing, but that was the thing. My dad was in the Air Force. My brother-in-law was in the Marines. Both of my grandfathers served during the Korean War. I have other family members that were also in the Army and the Navy, and like my aunt was in the Navy, you know. So, you know, we have a very rich military history in our family. And I don't know, like, I guess I could, I don't know. And it's kind of going back and forth on it. You know, would I want to? I'm not sure. And then after that, 9/11, boom, that was it. I was like, I'm out. That's it. And I left about a month and a half later. I left in November just because of how the time worked, you know. And my reason for joining at the time, you know, everybody was real patriotic. Everybody was really about like America first and, you know, all that stuff. And I wasn't doing anything with my life. So it was kind of like, I want to give back. I want to serve. And I've always had a servant heart. And that's kind of what's guided me the whole time, you know, coming from a place of service. And those were instilled in me as a kid, as a teenager, as an adult, you know, from my mom, my grandfather who served in the Army, having a servant heart. And it kind of changed a little bit as you get into the military and you get your paychecks, you figure out your duty station. Like my first duty station was in England. So of course, America in Europe, or an American in Europe partying all the time, clubs, bars, taking trips. I mean, it was just, I was living a rock star lifestyle, then developed a drinking problem, like all military members should, right?
Right. Yeah.
And it kind of was my downfall. You know, I was building businesses. I was doing amazing work in and out of the military. And it got to a point in 2008 where just I crumbled, absolutely crumbled. Came back from a really, really horrible deployment. And I just crumbled. Everything around me just crumbled. My marriage was over. Business was lost. I lost myself drinking and you know, it's always hard on the deployment. It's even harder when some of you don't return. So it's just,
Right.
it was really hard. And then I overcame that, you know, with the help of like, I got therapy and like all the stuff that you should do. My boss, you know, my commander, you know, they all made me do that stuff. And they said, you need to go to basic training. You lost yourself. You lost your why. You need to go back to basics. So they recommended to me that I go be an instructor in basic training, fill out all the stuff, did all the things, got the prerequisites, boom, got it. And I was like, no kidding. And then I went to be a drill instructor. And that's when I learned how to teach, train, coach, mentor, instruct, all of that. And so I had this moment of my life, this deep, dark night of the soul moment. Then I went to basic training, learned how to talk about it, teach it, train it. So I became a speaker. And then after basic training, I developed a platform to tell my story on. So it's just amazing how it worked out. And then I found my why again to become a, you know, lead from a servant heart and to always give back, to give more than I take. And that fuels me as a speaker and as a trainer now.
That's awesome. Obviously, we're sorry to hear about your deployment, and we'll get a little bit into that if you're comfortable talking about that. But first, I gotta say, and I hate to tease you a little bit about it, but the falling apart marriage is kind of a requirement if you're in the military, especially if you're gonna
Right.
stay in for a long time. I'm sure you can concur with
Oh,
me,
yeah.
Mr. Douglas, that most of the higher ups have that. In the Navy, it's like if you're gonna be a chief, you need at least two divorces or one DUI or
And a
one
DUI.
divorce and three DUIs.
Yep. Yeah, you can't be an E9 in the military without at least two divorces or at least a DUI or an Article
Right.
15 of some kind.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's funny that you say that. Yeah. So just to keep things a little lighthearted for the time being, can you tell us a little bit about your time in England, where you were, what kind of cities you hit up, and the kind of trouble you got into?
Oh my. Oh, pretty sure I got kids over there somewhere.
Yeah,
Pretty sure.
that sounds about right.
Yeah, I got pretty sure. Yeah, I mean, you're what, 18, 19 years old in Europe, you know? So we were about 80 miles southeast of London. I was stationed at RAF Lakenheath. And Scotland was like every 3 or 4 day weekend.
Oh
So,
wow. Yeah, that's probably where the drinking was happening.
oh yeah, and it was like 3 hours away, you know. So you would just get in your car and just drive up 3 hours, and you're in Edinburgh.
Yeah, that's nothing compared to it's always blows my mind, you know, I haven't driven plenty around America. I mean, it takes 3 hours just to get, you know, from one state to another, sometimes a
Right.
quarter of a way through a state. Meanwhile, over
Right.
there, you can drive an hour or two and you're in a different country.
Yep, absolutely. So we went to Nottingham one time because it was the only Hooters in all of England at the time. This is like 2000, 2004.
Wow.
And Nottingham was about 2 hours away, up towards Scotland. And been all around all of England, explored everywhere, you know, been to York. I was actually, funny story, where me and two other guys, we were coming back from a trip to Scotland, and we see these very beautiful girls on the freeway. And so, of course, my buddy's like trying to wave at them. He's like, "Hey, what's up?" You know, and
Right.
so he's like trying to flag them down or whatever. He's like, "Give me something to ride on, like give me something." And I don't know why, but we had like a, I think we had like a notebook, or we had some kind of paper. We had some kind of like papers or whatever, right? So we write on the back of them, like the phone number, you know? And then they write on, they had like this notebook or whatever. It's so crazy. Like they're putting their number up. I'm like, okay, look, get the numbers, like get the number. So of course, a call, whatever. And we're like next to them. And my buddy's in the passenger seat, like talking to these girls. And they're, I guess, from an all-girl college in York.
Oh wow. You already know
And
that means they're kind of crazy.
oh yeah. Oh yeah. And they're like, yeah, we're heading to like a party, like we're gonna come hang out, you know, whatever. And we were just coming back, like, because we would always come back like that day and then just kind of hang out. But we're like, well, let's go back a day early. Well, we went back a day early. It was like a holiday or whatever. Oh yeah, we're on holiday, and we're gonna go to this party, you know, like whatever. So instead of going home, we ended up following these girls to like this one party or whatever. And start and partied with a bunch of girls from York, like all girl college. Oh my God. It was a great night. Let me tell you, it was an amazing night.
Is that where the kids might be from?
I think so. I think they're up there somewhere. But I mean, that's the things though, man. It was like living a rock star lifestyle, man. You're 18, 19 years old, not a care in the world, you know. We used to go to Scotland every year for New Year's because it was the largest party in Europe. They shut down the streets. Nobody's allowed to drive in or out of the city. They shut
Wow.
down the roads in and out of the city.
This sounds like a good time.
Oh my God, dude. It is amazing. The clubs and the bars are insane in Scotland, man. It is like party central, like nothing I've ever seen, you know. And I've been to, oh man, I've been to Italy, Spain, Germany, Norway, Scotland, Ireland, Singapore, Belgium, and Amsterdam. Where else? Dude, that's just off the top of my head.
Right.
I've probably
That's
been to more.
plenty. Yeah.
All in 3 years. All within
Wow.
3 years. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Were you living paycheck to paycheck at that point?
Oh, pff, dude, yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's no saving money. No. Why would I save
Yeah, I
money? I got to
figured
go
that.
party. I got things to do. I got places to see.
Yeah, I feel that. Did you have a go-to drink?
Oh, yep. Yep. So there was two of them that I that my go-to drink was. So in England, you have what's it called? Strongbow cider, super good. Well, if you top it off with a Guinness, it makes a very thick marshmallow.
Interesting.
And then what we would do is we would put like I don't know what it's called here, but it's like a red coloring, but it's called black currant over there. I don't know.
Okay.
It's like a I don't know. Forgot what it's called, but there's like a red coloring or whatever that you put in alcoholic drinks or whatever, you know. You do the same thing, but it's just really good, like really, really good. Or I would drink Double Jacks and Dr. Pepper, because Jack is already peppery anyways. Combine that with the Dr. Pepper and it is amazing. It does not taste like a Jack and Coke where it's like watered down. You water down the Jack. Like it really highlights the Jack. And most people who drink whiskey, they're like, I would have never thought to put Dr. Pepper in. I'm like, oh no, you got to put Dr. Pepper in your Jack. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, I'll have to try it sometime. I may be Mr. Whiskey, but I just drink it straight. I don't really like dark sodas. So the only time I mix a soda into alcohol is like I'll do Malibu coconut rum and Sprite. It's pretty
Yep.
good, but
Yep. I like the Tennessee honey, man. That's
yeah,
good. That's
that's what I'm
straight.
looking at right now in my room. I had it right
Yeah.
across from me, and I was looking at that. And as soon as you said Jack, I was like, maybe after
Yep.
this episode, I might go ahead and treat myself.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah, so let's see. I want to ask you about deployment. So did you get sent to the Middle East?
Oh
Were you
yeah.
like in a
Yeah, I've been
you were
deployed
in
six
combat?
times.
So you were
Yeah.
in combat. So what exactly was your rate? Or I don't know if the Air Force calls it MOS or what have you, but what was your job in the Air Force?
Yeah, it's an AFSC, basically an Air Force specialty classification, basically. So I was a tactical aircraft maintenance specialist, so basically like a crew chief.
Right.
We didn't really like, so as a crew chief, I mean, you stay back with the planes and you're a mechanic, right? So
Right.
my first deployment was in 2003, and we were stationed over in the Middle East, and then we were there during the invasion, and when they took over the Baghdad airport, we flew in with our F-15s, and started doing missions straight from the Baghdad airport, and then they had the F-16s there, and all the stuff. But there's a special duty that crew chiefs and maintainers for aircraft that they do, and it's ABDR, which is aircraft battle damage repair.
Oh,
So you
wow.
have to go to the desert and you have to like fix battle damaged aircraft.
That's
And
actually really cool.
we were deployed to Afghanistan, but part of that job was to go outside the wire and recover shot down airplanes or pilots, or crashed airplanes or pilots.
And that's dangerous
So
work.
not necessarily maybe like shot down, but like crashed. And like we flew to Alaska one time and had to dig a pilot out of the mountain because he crashed his F-22 into the side of the mountain. So we're like
Wow.
literally in a mountain, digging out of, like the pilot was embedded in the mountain.
You have to say that's a really unique job, though.
About 4 years of that. But one of the deployments that we were on, so we used to run convoys and we had our own armory, we had our own like SOPs and TTPs and all that. And it was just a really, really hard deployment, to the Middle East, like deep in Afghanistan. And it was a really bad deployment. So it was one of the most deadliest ones. It was right around like 2007, 2008, where like Fallujah's popping off, and Kandahar's a hot zone, and it's just so much was going on around 2007, 2008. And so we went out there, and it was just man, it was tough. And so when we talk about combat, it's not like you see in the movies, where you're like going through this village or whatever. And I mean, yeah, you get shot at, but it's not like you would think, like the
An
movies
intense
portray
full-on
it to
war
be.
scene.
Yeah, it's not like a full-on like war scene. I mean, there are. I mean, don't get me wrong, like there are, but
Yeah.
like that's not the type of combat that I was in. There might be a couple like hostiles like embedded in this town or whatever. You take them out, you keep on going. It's more of the IEDs that you have to worry about more than like enemy combatants. Because
Right,
that
and
stuff
just
sticks around
for
forever.
I was going to say, for our listeners who don't know what that is, could you give us a little education on that?
For what, IEDs?
Yes, sir.
Oh yeah. So IEDs are improvised explosive devices. They can be anything from a cell phone connected to an answering machine that sends a signal that explodes bombs, or I've seen explosives put into a coffee can and they have spray foam, and inside the spray foam are nails and screws. And so when you kick open a door, the crush wire that is around the door makes contact, whatever, and it explodes the coffee can, which then explodes nails and screws into whoever went through the door.
Right. So
So,
this isn't your classic bomb. This is just
homemade.
anything that can hurt you, any shrapnel they can send into you. And
Yep.
so, Mr. Douglas, when you were going through some of these zones, were you ever injured yourself?
No, thank God. No.
Right. But
I
you
mean,
definitely.
other than like rolling my ankle and fracturing my ankle on the side of a mountain, but no. No.
Right. But you saw people you served with pretty closely
Oh yeah.
to you. Okay. But so was it kind of sometimes you would be with the airplane and you would see everyone go out and then not everyone would come back?
It only happened like, I don't know, twice maybe.
Okay. And how
So, I
did it
mean, with the Air
affect you?
Force, like, we're not really like in the combat, you know what I mean? It's not like the Army or Marines, like, that's their
Right.
job. But I've ran multiple convoys with them, you know, and have been on, you know, a convoy where like the lead vehicle gets attacked, the rear vehicle gets attacked, and now you're stuck in the middle with like the four other vehicles that you guys have. And, you know,
Right.
like I've been in that type of situation, you know, on our way in or out of whatever area we were going to pick up an airplane, like in the Middle East, you know, going to recover whatever we were going to recover. You know, something got damaged, like an A-10 got damaged, you know, we got to go pick up whatever we were going to pick up, you know.
And did you
So,
enjoy that work, recovering
I mean,
the aircrafts and seeing what
oh
kind of
yeah.
damage was done to them?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. When you see an A-10 land with no canopy, half of a wing, you know, there's no like, so what happened was the gun jammed and like double, so it like basically like double fed. So there was a round in there that didn't go off, and then another round got put in right behind it, and that one went off, was shot through that round, which then blew the gun right off the airplane, blew the
Wow.
nose wide open. So when the pilot landed, he had his feet sticking out almost out of the airplane on the rudder pedals. So it could have blown his legs off for sure.
Right.
But you could see where the rudder pedals were. It blew the canopy off the airplane. The D-ring that is on the side of the airplane to punch the canopy disconnected from the airplane and hit the lip of the intake cord, went through the intake, damaged the motor. So he's landing the airplane with no canopy, no nose of the airplane, barely rudder pedals, and like one engine. Crazy.
Yeah, it's not something you see every day. So,
Right. So yeah,
speaking
that
of
was fun.
enjoying, I was gonna say, speaking of enjoying your work, you know, why did you stay in for 20 years? Why not do more? Why not do less? I mean, I saw you did 20 years in 4 days, so you
Yep.
did more than you had to get, you know, the full
Yep.
benefits. And I'm sure that's wasn't your choice, was kind of how things lined up. But why didn't you
Yeah,
stay in, and why did you stay in?
well, you know, I was gonna get out in 2008. I was like done. I was like, this is stupid. I'm out. And then I was gonna get out right after I was done with my time as a drill instructor. I was like, I think I'm done. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, but then you go to a new duty station. Okay, let me see what this job has to offer. Let me see what I'm gonna be doing here, you know.
Right.
But like after like 10 years, you really gotta make a decision. After about 15, you're crazy if you don't just stay in for the extra 5. After 15 years, like you just have to stay in.
Look, you say that, and I was talking with someone the other day. Dude did 19 years and said, I can't do another single day.
That's crazy. That's completely
I couldn't believe
insane.
it either. I said, you didn't have terminal leave saved up or anything.
Right? 6 months of
19
leave, 3 months?
years.
Nah. You're 1 year, dude. I get a pension. I got TRICARE health insurance for me and the family. I
I
mean,
know.
there's
1 year
so
away.
many benefits. I have a pension for the rest of my life. My pension is somebody's paycheck. You know, like an actual like I talk to people like, oh, well, like what's your salary? Like, what do you get paid? You know, like my military pay and disability pay is pretty much what someone's making in a 9-to-5 job.
Right. Yeah, no, I
So,
agree.
you know,
So,
the crazy. Never ever would I do that. So, I
yeah.
mean, I went to a certain point, was like, screw it, I'm just gonna stay in. Screw it.
Yeah,
You
of
know, so I
course. I
did.
mean, like you said, 10 years, it's like, all right, we're halfway. We're either going to back out now or keep going. But if you keep going, you might as well do the rest of that 10 years. And
Yep. And
so,
then I re-enlisted, you know, 4 years away from, I was at my 16-year mark. Contract was ending. I re-enlisted, got a re-enlistment bonus. Never in my life had I had a re-enlistment bonus in the 16 years of my career. We never had one. And all of a sudden, 2016, 2017, they got a bonus. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I
yeah, that's
re-enlisted,
nice.
got the bonus, and I was like, I'm set. I'm done. That's it. This is my last re-enlistment ever. So I
Yeah.
re-enlisted for the remaining 4 years. And I planned on getting out. I literally planned on getting out. So there was no way that I was going to stay in. I was already dead set on getting out. What fueled me retiring when I did was in my 19th year, I got orders to Korea. And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Right
Like,
before you get out.
yeah, I was like, come on. And the orders were for me to leave in my retirement year, go past my whole retirement year, my whole 19th or 20th year, or whatever you want to call it, right? Would have been spent on a 1 year remote tour to Korea. And then to even accept the assignment, I mean, I could have just did Korea and like leave or whatever, but you can't retire from overseas like that. Like on a tour, you have to go back to a duty station. So I just probably would have just went back to North Carolina where I was and everything would have been fine. But then they were like, well, you have to have a follow-on assignment. I'm like, well, I don't want to stay in. Like, why would I have to go to a follow-on assignment? That's a 2 year commitment right there. So just by accepting the Korea orders, I would have had to re-enlist to go to Korea and take the orders for 2 years. They gave me Vegas. I'm like, what? Like, I got young kids and it's 2019, 2020. Like, why in the hell? Oh, 2020. It's 2020. I'm like, why would I want to spend 2 years locked down in Vegas? Their economy
That
is
sounds awful.
zero right now. I am not raising kids in Las Vegas. Not happening. I've been to Vegas so many times. Like, there's no, absolute no way on earth I am living in any part of Las Vegas and trying to raise kids. Not a chance in hell. So I said, I denied the orders, which guaranteed that I had to get out. Like, I legit ended my career by not accepting the orders. And like, you must retire. I'm like, well, no crap. I planned on it anyways. It's just I would have loved to do it maybe another couple of months, or maybe go on one more deployment, or maybe go on one more TDY, like something, But in the end, I was forced to retire because I denied orders to Korea.
Well, I don't blame you. Trust me, I
Oh, I
that's
don't
that
either.
military BS right there where they try to do that thing like, "Oh, oops, a billet got filled. Now we need you to go here," or something like that. I don't know. No. And I've talked about this with other nukes because the Navy nuclear program has some of the worst retention, in the Navy. The Navy in general is suffering with recruiting and retention right now, and I think it's all across the branches, honestly. But that being said, I said, look, the concept of the dream sheet is pretty good. I assume the Air Force does that too, where you kind of put like,
Just a
here's where
joke.
I'd like to go, number one place, number two place, number three place.
That's a joke.
Yeah, no, it is. It is pretty much it. Well, I got lucky. I actually got everything I asked for. But there's a lot of people who don't. And I said, look, big Navy,
A
Air
lot of
Force,
people.
look, you want people to stay in. People are actually willing and want to make this their career. I said, you just got to follow our plan, right? Obviously, you got these certain billets you need to meet. But look, I want to go to Hawaii. I want to be a nuclear instructor, or I want to work on a submarine. And I want to do this, this, this. I'll do 20 years if we follow this schedule. Or I'm about to be a dad. I really want to raise my kids in the South because that's the greatest part of America. And could you station me here? And I'd like to do this, 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 and this. Or I'm in the Air Force. I really want to travel. I'm tired of being stuck in America. I came from a poor family. I want to travel. Could I please go to this place, and this place? And they promise that. And it's like, it's only if you're lucky. I know people who they joined the Navy to go to Japan and the ship never went there. Or they got to Japan and the base was locked down because of political issues, So it's very hit or miss with that dream sheet. And Mr. Douglas, did you get what you wanted out of the
Hell
Air
no.
Force?
Hell no. When we come out of tech, you're in basic training or tech school or whatever you're in, I think it's basic training. You're like, list eight stateside bases and eight overseas.
Right.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Stateside. North Carolina, Florida, Hawaii, Alaska, all the awesome places, right? Overseas, big, bold underlined and circled no overseas.
Right.
My first duty station was England. It's
Yeah.
like somebody saw that and goes, watch this, hold my beer, and gave me an overseas assignment. I'm like, you
Yeah.
got to be kidding me. I did not want to go overseas at 18, 19 years old. You know,
Right.
like my first time away from home, I do not want to go all the way overseas, then go all the way and deploy into the desert and like whatever. Because when I got this unit, they're like, oh, they deploy all the time. I'm like, are you
You
kidding
gotta be
me?
kidding me. You
Yeah, I
gotta be
went to the,
kidding
and legit, the unit that I was in England was the most deployed unit in Europe.
That's amazing. That's like
Yep.
nothing beats getting to a chain of command and everyone's like, we hate it here. We have,
Oh,
one
everybody
in
loved
three
it. No,
suicides a
everybody loved it
month.
there. No,
Yeah.
the exact opposite. It was the best unit I've ever served in any, I've been to six different duty stations.
Okay.
It the so I was in the 494th Black Panthers at RAF
Oh
Lakenheath,
yeah.
the F-15 unit in the Strike Eagles.
Oh yeah.
Greatest unit I have ever served in, ever. We were on missions all the time. We didn't have
Well, that's
any
good.
suicides. We had no suicides.
That's perfect to hear. That
We
morale
had
is what we need.
we had super high morale, super high morale. The other two units that were on the base, they had a couple problems. They had a lot of drinking problems. They had like
Yeah.
just a lot of problems. We didn't have that. We were always on the road. It was like TDYs, like every month, every couple months, we were gone. You know, I mean, our mission was just, I mean, we literally had a global mission.
Right.
You know, and you were, it was almost like you were too busy to do anything else.
I
You
get what you're
know?
saying. Yeah, it kept you
But
busy,
yeah,
but it's also what I was just going to say is
yeah.
the what we've talked about on the show a couple of times is how your chain of command or your command climate really makes or breaks the mission or the station for you. Because you could be in a beautiful place like Hawaii, beautiful place, but you could have a toxic chain of command that makes you hate it, or they restrict your free time so much you can't enjoy Hawaii. And so I know you've probably, have you had any really bad chain of commands?
Oh
I already knew
yeah.
the answer was yes, but I had to
Oh
ask
my
anyway.
God. Oh my God. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I was in a chain of command. It was an absolute complete joke. Oh my
Yeah.
gosh. That was actually my last duty station. The last unit
Of
that I was in.
course. Of
So
course.
I went to Seymour Johnson in North Carolina. Went to one of the units there. There's four units down there. Went to the unit. Was amazing. It's kind of the same thing. Always deployed. They're like the best unit. They get all the awards, you know. And
Okay,
then
awesome.
I went to be an inspector for the like the end of the runway and like and basically in charge of like making sure the aircraft is airworthy and like all that stuff before it takes off. Like we're the last look of the airplane. Yeah. And then I give it the green light to go ahead and take off. Did that for 4 or 5 years. And then they were like, hey, you need to come to this other unit. I'm like, which one? I get to that. I'm like, there's not a chance I'm going to that unit. Like, I'm doing everything possible to get out of the unit because as soon as they told me, like, yeah, you're going to this unit, I'm like, no, absolutely not. They are horrible. Horrible. Suicides, alcohol problems, Article 15. I mean, they are like the worst unit on that base.
And you're trying to
And
get
I
out of
spent
there. You're almost about to retire.
And I spent a year and a half there, and it was absolute joke.
The longest year and a half in the service for you.
Longest year and a half of my life. It was an absolute
Yeah,
joke of leadership, an absolute joke of a squadron, absolute joke of personnel. Just, I mean, it was like the misfits. You know, it was so horrible.
can you kind of elaborate on that for us? Like, what do you mean? Like, people just can't do their jobs, they're idiots, or what kind of is
Yep,
the issue here?
everything. It's like
Nothing gets done.
a squadron full of frat boys. You
Okay,
know, like
yeah.
they're just first of all, they suck at their job.
Yeah.
Leadership didn't care. They're just
Okay.
lazy. You know,
Yep,
and
sounds about
in the
right.
military we have regs, right?
Yeah.
We have standards and regulations.
This was a free for
And
all.
I was free for all. Yeah, people would wear the uniform however the hell they want. I'm like, dude, how are you wearing your uniform right now? Like, look at you. You look like a you look like a freaking
Disrespectful.
you look like a bag of ass, dude. Like, what are you doing? And
Yeah.
then leadership was like, leave them alone. I'm like, what? You should be correcting them. And then they would yell at me, like, I outrank you. I'm like, I don't know how. Like, there's obvious signs of neglect and disregard for standards and practices. Like, there's SOPs set in the military, but this unit does whatever this unit wants to do. They didn't care. I'm gonna do whatever I want to do, and they didn't. They would fail inspections. They'd laugh it off. You know, people would get hurt. They'd laugh it off. Like, ah, whatever. Guy's an idiot, anyways. Whatever. It
Right.
was just a horrible time.
So you
Horrible.
kind of you just cut it to low head, a low profile. You're like, I'm getting out of here. I don't want to get wrapped up in anything stupid. Someone else does something stupid and wraps you up in it. So you were trying to get out of there.
Oh, I'm out.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're out. I hope y'all are enjoying this episode of Couple of Nukes, the podcast.
I know I am.
Have you ever wanted to take your comedy game from this
Cricket, cricket, cricket.
to this?
Ha 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 ha. That's so funny. Let me get your number. Let me tap that backstage waiter.
Well, now you can.
How's that?
With the PNN Academy.
The PNN Academy?
Yes, ma'am, it's a school of comedy, production, and live performances and podcasts for the comedy industry, created by the filmmaker and professional comedian Stephen Kimbrough, aka Pod Brother, and host of Pod Brother Nation. In fact, it's best described as a relaxed community of open-minded individuals looking to learn and level up in crafts, skills, and industry trades, and you'll have an access to a slew of resources, be mentored by professional comedians and actors, and even be in the talent pool for possible stage time and selected comedy tour dates.
That's a lot of stuff. What else do they offer?
Well, you'll learn about stage presence, stand-up comedy, podcasting, hosting, and guesting, filming and acting, movie production, social skills, networking, mentorship, and improv.
Everything that I want to learn and more.
That's right. And the best part is it's a lifetime membership for just one payment.
A lifetime membership?
Yep, for just one payment. And because I'm the coordinator of memberships, you can actually use my code Mr. Whiskey without the E for a discount. That's MRWHISKY. For a discount off your one-time payment for a lifetime of resources, including access to some of the selected programs, including my Laughter's Comedy Club, The Penalty Game, Hollywood Drive-In Festival, and Pod Brother.
So where do I go to use that code and sign up?
You can go to podbrothernation.com, link in the description below for the podcast. Join today.
Hoo-yah!
And we are back from that wonderful ad with Ms. Whitney and myself for the PNN Academy. Now, Mr. Douglas, we left off with you getting to your new chain of command right at the end of your contract, keeping a low profile, staying out of trouble, and then you got out. Now that you're out, it sounds like you still want to help people. That's your main goal and objective in life. And so, what are you doing nowadays with that? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you said you've given 3 TEDx talks. So you can tell us a little bit about that and how you're helping people nowadays.
Yes. Yep. So yeah, professional speaker, keynote speaker, corporate trainer. So I speak on resilience, leadership, team building, and team performance and business positioning strategies for podcasters, speakers, and authors. I got 2 best-selling books, and I host 2 podcasts and also host a third. And that third podcast is specifically for the nonprofit that I'm a vice president of. So I'm a vice president of a nonprofit called One Life Fully Lived. And we basically teach you how to live your most epic dream life. And so that's mostly what I do is podcasting, speaking, corporate training, events and conferences and things like that.
Right. And ladies and gentlemen, you'll find links to most of that in the description below for the podcast. Or if you go to the brand new website I made, well, by the time this episode comes out, it won't be so brand new, but Went ahead and made an official website for the Couple of Nukes podcast. I think it looks beautiful. And if you go to the guest page, you will find Mr. Douglas. You will find his handsome profile picture with a list of all of those, his TED Talks, his books, websites, his podcast, as well as a link back to this episode. So be sure to check that out. But Mr. Douglas, I mean, how does that feel? So you've been able to reach out to all these people and travel and give all these talks. And can you kind of tell us about your two books and your two other podcasts?
So my one podcast is a business podcast called Create, Launch, Monetize Podcast, where we teach you how to create, launch, and monetize whatever you want, a business, a book, how to create, launch, and monetize a podcast, how to create, launch, and monetize a program, a product, a service, whatever it is that you want to create and make money from. We show you how. The second show is based off of my best-selling book, From No Worth to Self-Worth. And it's all about how do we go from the deepest, darkest night of our soul, the most horrible place on earth, our rock bottom? How do we go from that to self-worth? How do we go from having no worth, no self-esteem, not wanting to live, wanting to end our life, to living our best version? How do we do that? And that's what the show's about. So that's the second book that I wrote as well. And we're working on turning that into an actual TV show. So we're gonna do some filming and some other things, and hopefully that gets off the ground pretty quick. But the first book I ever wrote in 2016 was called Decisions: The Power to Overcome Self-Defeating Behaviors. And it's a book about my self-defeating behaviors, fact-based positive psychology research studies that really dispel myths about self-defeating behaviors and why we self-sabotage ourselves.
Right. It kind of sounds like you have a lot on your plate. So how do you handle having so many things you're running at once?
Love this question. People are like, how do you get so much done? Like, you do a lot. Yep. Because I manage my energy, not my time. Time can't be managed. You cannot stand in the same river twice. Once it's gone, it's gone. That's it.
Right.
People are like, oh, time management. No, energy management. It's a simple process where you write down everything that you got to do that day, and then you assign that task based on the energy that's required, the output. You assign it to your energy level throughout the day. If it's a very hard task, you're not going to do it at the end of the day where you have no energy. You're never going to get it done. But then it'd be a waste to give like a low energy frequency task, like something that's like very, 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 very simple that anybody can do it. It'd be very stupid for you to do it at your most peak energy. That would be really dumb. So, energy management. Write out your goals for the day. Figure out how much energy it's going to take to complete those goals, and then assign the tasks according to your energy.
Right, so kind of knowing your limits, knowing how to pace yourself, how to schedule what where, so you'll have the maximum and most efficient way of getting things done. So that's pretty awesome. And
Yeah, for sure.
so you started this all while you were still in, or you had everything set up so
Yes.
as soon as you got out?
Nope. I was doing all this while I was in. I wrote my first book in 2016. I didn't retire until 2021. I was podcasting. I had a radio. I had a live radio show. I did right in the house. I was speaking, training, mentoring, speaking, giving seminars. Yeah. I've been, and then even then when I was a drill instructor, I built a business and had a store, had a resale store. And I was still pulling in like $4,000 weekends.
Wow.
So
That's nice.
in 2010, 11, 12, 13, yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's more than most people make a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I did want to talk about, you kind of got away from it. I'm gonna head back to it, which was, so you were a drill instructor, so you were in charge of all the new recruits trying to join the Air Force, correct? So can you tell us, you got a lot of funny stories from that, just recruits
Oh
that.
man.
Because I just from my boot camp experience, which is only like 2 months, the people I encountered, some interesting characters, some crazy stuff that happened. So I can
Oh
only
yeah.
imagine as an instructor, some of the crazy stuff you saw and some of the most frustrating moments of your life, probably.
I had male and female flights as an instructor. I led and trained both males and females. And
Okay.
they both bring their own sets of pros and cons. Mostly
Interesting.
shower time with the females was, you know, because like, okay, I'm leaving the dorm. Make sure that the slide or whatever the there's like a sliding thing like over the window, you know? Don't answer the door. Make sure you guys, you know, you got like 30 minutes, you know, whatever, whatever, right? So
Right.
I radio up, like we're in our CQ, and I flip the switch. And there's an intercom, right? So I talk over the door. I'm like, "Are you done?" They're like, "Yes, sir, we're done." It's like, "Is everybody dressed?" "Yes, sir, we're all dressed." I'm like, "Awesome. I'm coming upstairs." And so they have to announce when I come in the dorm.
Right,
So of
the
course
mail
I
on
knock,
deck.
give my ID. Yep. And I walk in the dorm, and right as I walk right in the dorm, right as I walk in the dorm, naked female comes right out of the latrine. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And not a towel, not nothing. Just
Just
I was like,
titties
"You
out,
got to,
everything
yeah,
out.
oh yeah, 100%." Oh man, I screamed at the female that let me in, and I told the dorm chief, I was like, "Fix it now!" And I just left. I was like, "I'm done. Like I'm done with this
One
flight.
of the unspoken benefits of the job, I guess.
I'm going to jail." Like, oh
Yeah.
God. I was like, oh God. And then they apologized. They're like, "We're really sorry. We didn't know she was in there." And like, it was this
Yeah.
whole thing. Like, "I was late from details. Like, I'm really sorry." And I was like,
Yeah.
"I said, check the latrine. I said, check the showers. I said, check the dorm." And they
The
even
last thing you
announced,
want is to get sappered.
"Yep, gentlemen entering the dorm." And then everybody's got to yell at gentlemen in the dorm. And then that's when she decided to run out of the latrine because she's like, "Oh crap." You know?
Gotta stand at attention.
100%. So if I'm in the dorm and there's like, you know, I don't know. Anyway, it was bad. I was like, I'm out. I went downstairs. I told my boss. He laughed. Thank you for telling me. Thank God I didn't find out, because then, you know, you could like be investigated or whatever. Like, thank you for telling me.
Yeah.
Calls the dorm chief down. Is this what happened? Yes, sir. All of us were in there. All of the females were in there at the same time. Like, you know, we're all witnesses. This is what happened. You know, so. You know, I let him know, like, this is what happened. He just started laughing. He's like, "Ah, you got caught." You know, like, he's like,
Yeah.
"You can't trust them females, man." It was just so funny, because I was like, and so then at that point, I was like, "Everybody check your space. Everybody check the latrine. Everybody check the shower. Everybody check the, you know, is everybody dressed?" Like, I would make sure. Are you sure? Is every Oh my God. It's
Yeah,
like
you
a
can only do so
scarring
much, though.
experience, you know, but females have their own challenges. You know, they're kind of emotional and
Right.
they're kind of mean to each other a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Males,
No,
males are
nothing
just
better than a
dumb.
girl fight.
Yeah. Males are just dumb. You
Yep.
know, they just, I, one flight I had a, so there was a football player from Georgia Tech, a lineman from Georgia Tech, big, massive human, huge. So I made him a dorm chief. Like, "You're in charge of the flight. You're the dorm chief. You're the squad leader." Okay. And the day after graduation is like, they go on town pass, they see their families or whatever. So I'm coming up the dorm to check on them, make sure, like, okay, everybody's back. Nobody got injured downtown. Nobody got a fight. Everybody's cool, you know, whatever. And they're not loud, but they're loud enough to where I'm like, "What the hell is going on?" Like, I can hear, like, you want quiet, but I can hear people like being loud or whatever. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, you still have stuff to do. Like, you still got to like come back. You got to make sure that the dorm is clean, like all the stuff, right? They had taken the bays beds, pushed them against the lockers, lined the floor and the beds with all of the mattresses,
Yep.
and they were running, like the other members were running on the mattresses and was carrying their own mattress, and the lineman was shoulder tackling them into the
Yep.
mattresses,
Yep, that
like
sounds it.
bulldozing them into the mattresses.
I'm not at all surprised by this.
Like, I was like, what in the hell is this? And they all stood at attention or whatever. And I'm like, what are you doing? And they just looked at me, and then they looked at the lineman, and then looked back at me. I was like, anybody, does anybody want to talk about what the hell we're doing in here? And they, and you could just see them, like, they're just like they're standing at
Making
attention, but
noise.
they're like, they're all turning beet red because they're trying not to laugh.
Yeah.
The lineman was like, because he had to give reports, they were like, sir, training road reports is ordered, sir. They were challenging me, sir. I'm like, you know what? I don't, I don't,
Dismissed.
I'm leaving. I put your crap back together. I'm done. I had a funny, I, so you have these, we call them instructor tools.
Yeah.
We're literally beating the flight. I mean, push-ups, flutter kicks. I mean, I am beating the
Yeah, I know what
crap
you're talking about.
out of this flight, right? I'm smoking this flight. And I got this one kid who's the cause of it all. I was like, are we laughing now? Are we smiling? I don't think so. Are you feeling good? He's like, yes, sir. I'm like, really? You're feeling good? Tell me how good this feels. He's doing flutter kicks and he is sweating and he's panting. And I was like, tell me how good it is. He's like, good, sir. I'm like, no, I want you to tell me right now. Tell me how good you are. Tell me how good does this feel? He's like, so good, sir. Like real loud and like he's hurting, right? And
Wow.
he's like dying. I could see that in his face. I mean, he is dying. And he's like, so good, sir. Barely breathe, barely talk. And I was, oh man, I just lost it. I was dying laughing. I was like, you're done. Everybody up on your feet. And everybody is like panting at the same time, like smirking and stuff. And I was like, oh my God. And this kid, I mean, I smoked this kid, And it was just a funny moment. And I was like, you know what? Like, we kind of needed that. It gets real tense sometimes. It happens. Like, I was the instructor that let it happen. Most instructors are like, I'm gonna beat you harder. Like, you
Yeah, I
can't
was
really
gonna say
do
you
that.
sound pretty chill compared to
Yeah.
most. Some
Well, I well,
there's
my
a lot of
nickname.
power trips in the military.
Oh,
People get
geez.
too caught up in themselves. They get a little bit of power, especially guys who were bullied in high school or something, especially the security and the, we call them the military police on the aircraft carriers and the bases. I mean, sometimes they're just, especially the ones guarding the gate. Like you're like a crossing guard in, a military uniform, and sometimes they'll be like a complete dick for no reason. And it's like, look, man, I'm just trying to get on base, and I don't know, they don't know how to scan your ID, and they're like, oh, you're not allowed on or something. It pissed me off one time. Most of the guys were chill. When I was in Norfolk, to get on base, you had to have they like every now and then they would check your license plate. Like every gate guard had their own procedure, and a couple of them checked mine. They were like, hey, man. Like your tags are expired. And I was like, yeah, I know. South Carolina, and this is crazy. People are gonna say this isn't true. South Carolina never sent me my new tags. And I called them and they said, Mr. Whiskey, we're out of the material to make new tags. I don't know how that was possible. They were out. And I was like, all right. And they sent me a receipt or something of that. And most of the gate guards were cool. They're like, yeah, just go on ahead on base, Mr. Whiskey. Until I got this one guy. Nope, you're not allowed on. It's illegal. You would get pulled over. And I argued with him because I pulled up the Virginia law. And actually, you have a certain amount of months after they expire to get them replaced. And it's not illegal. And I'm one of those people like, yeah, I know the laws and rules, not to follow them, to argue with other people who try to accuse me of not following them. There's one of those guys everywhere. But and he wouldn't let me on base. But I needed to go there for work. So then I had to get rides from bum rides off of people all the time. But yeah, just people who go on a power trip. We had this one bald headed guy. He thought he was like a Marine commander, and he's just a like first class or second class petty officer on an aircraft carrier in charge of restricted sailors and monitoring the hallway. And this dude is like having everyone stand at attention, reciting the sailor's creed multiple times a day. Louder, recite it louder, be proud to be a sailor. And he's actually on
Oh
Facebook.
my
You can find him on
God.
the MA meme page. They made a bunch of memes about him, and yeah, they're kind of bullying him on Facebook if you want to check that out.
That's
But yeah,
gross.
But just speaking of boot camp, you were reminding me of, and sometimes, like you said, the drill instructors have fun with it. We had a guy, and I don't know if you had to do this in the Air Force, but you had to do a certain amount of push-ups and all this to pass your physical fitness test.
Yeah,
Well,
of
it's
course.
self-report, or it was your partner reports, right?
Right,
We
with the
had this guy,
partners.
he had broken his leg and he had been in boot camp for like half a year. His hair was like 6 inches tall. He had this giant head of hair and he looked stupid, but no one made him get rid of it. Anyway, he had done like what? In 2 minutes, he had done like 120, 140 push-ups.
No
I already
way.
see he had to punish him one day. He's like, come on, let's go. Down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up. Oh, funny. You can't even do 5 push-ups, but on your physical fitness test, you did 140. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that real interesting? And he
Oh
was trying to
my
have him do
God.
actual push-ups, and guy could not. In fact, this is a really funny story. We had this guy, he got rolled back because he couldn't pass the swim test. They sent him into my division. Guy was kind of nasty, he was ugly, he wasn't nice to anyone. And I got partnered with him for the push-ups. And I was like, hey man, if you're struggling with this and like you're just a few shy, like, we're a brotherhood. Like, I'm not trying to see you do another 2, 4 weeks of boot camp. No one wants that. He was like, I will report you if you do that. I am a sailor with integrity. Don't you ever say that again. Blah blah blah. Guy was like real nasty to me. I was like, oh, okay, fine. Fine. You want to be like that? The very next morning, right before we do the push-ups, he's like, hey, Mr. Whiskey, if I don't make it, you think you could bump the number up a little bit?
Well,
I
spot
was
me.
like, oh, you gotta be oh, okay. I was so tempted to be like, hell no. Hell no. I'm a sailor with integrity. I'm not gonna lie about the numbers,
Right.
but it is just funny. He wanted to act all tough, and then right before we do the push-ups, he's like, actually, you know what? Scratching the back of his head, looking away. But yeah, we definitely had, you were talking about the wrestling and stuff, and you said men are dumb. And that's funny that you said that because in the Navy boot camp, you'll hear a lot of times the instructors will say this. I don't know if you've ever said this, but it's like, if we're not going to be a smart division, we're going to be a strong division. And it was like, we couldn't be smart. We couldn't keep our mouths shut. And so they're going to, drill us and do what we had to do. They had a little list of like, it's like the size of a business card and had the workouts, just like you were talking about the different levels of workouts to quote, beat the recruits. And about the men just wrestling, that's just what men do, especially it seems military men, because me and a bunch of guys in the galley, when I was working in the galley for a little bit, went down into this storage room and it was filled with hundreds of plates and knives and shirt, all the stuff for the kitchen. And someone hit the light switch, and instantly everyone just rushed each other and started wrestling in the dark. And I had no idea what the hell was going on because my instinct was not to just bum rush the guy next to me. Then
Right.
someone threw another sailor down onto the knives and everything. We're like, guys, we need to stop right now,
Oh my
smashing plates and
God.
stuff. But yeah, so we turn the lights back on, and then 5 seconds later, someone's like, round two, and they would turn off the lights, and then we would all just bum rush each other. And I'm standing there like, oh man, the wrong person walks in on this, it's gonna be hell to pay.
Right. Jeez.
But yeah, so you enjoyed your time as a drill instructor, because I'm sure you had
Oh
some
yeah.
heart to hearts
Oh
with
yeah,
some
100%.
airmen or airwomen who were feeling like they were going to drop out, and you inspired them to stay in, or you have any
Oh
moments like that?
yeah. Oh, that was like the best. Oh yeah. That was literally like the best. So
Yeah, I can imagine that. That's
yeah, for
great.
sure.
Yeah, well, thank you. I want to thank you for all you did for them and everything you did for the 20 years before that. And I just want to say, it's been great having you on the show, and I just want to ask you
Yeah.
if you have any closing remarks or anything you'd like to wrap up with.
No, man. I really appreciate you giving me a time and a platform to hopefully inspire somebody, tell some stories, kind of reminisce on the military career. Just really appreciate what you're doing, and really appreciated my 20 years in the military, man. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad to be out.
Yeah.
And, on to bigger and better things,
Yeah. And like I said, usually we've had a lot of life advice on the channel. So I appreciate you coming on for more of a comedy segment. But ladies and gentlemen, if you are looking for that, life advice. If you really like Mr. Douglas, be sure to check out in the description below for the podcast. Once again, the links to his TED Talks, to his books, to his podcasts. Check that out, especially if you're trying to monetize your podcast or grow it or your business or whatever it may be. And if you know anyone who might need that kind of stuff, feel free to send them his books or his podcast or send them this episode. Yeah, Mr. Douglas, once again, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, man.
Sailing through the ocean blue, nuclear reactors, my crew, guiding the ship. The stars as our guide, through the waves we ride. Jokes of laughter fill the air. On this voyage, we have to share. Working together, side by side, as one family, we will abide. In the heart of the ship, we reside. Nuclear operators with pride, powering the vessel with every stride. Our mission, a source of great pride.